Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. And coming up this morning at 10:15 is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on stage and studio, Demay Roberts presents her documentary, Talking with the Wind, The Mystery of Opal Whiteley, the story of a young woman from Cottage Grove, Oregon, who became the center of an international controversy. And at 11:30, it's Art Focus, interviews with curators, critics, and artists. KBOO keeps you informed, and you can get involved. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. And now, after this announcement, at 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary.
Did you know that KBOO's daily evening newscast is produced by a team of volunteers right here in our Portland studios? If you've got some extra time and would like to get free training in radio news production, come on down to the studio and get involved. You can learn interviewing, writing, editing, and production skills, all for free, in a fun and supportive environment. Call KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes, at 503-231-8032 to get involved. That number again is 503-231-8032 to volunteer with the KBOO Evening News.
Morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, December 19th, 2017, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, your sanctuary radio, your resistance radio, your whistleblower radio, and of course your fake news radio, 90.7 FM on the air, KBOO.FM everywhere. We have rain today. It could be heavy at times. Temperatures hovering around 46, and winds 15 to 21 miles. It's gusting up to 33. So, and tonight rain continuing, pounding on through the midnight hours, and still that wind dropping off a bit, gusting up to 21 miles per hour for tomorrow. Very slight chance of showers and. Gradually clearing with a high around 46, wind dropping off as well for tomorrow night. Oh, that wonderful, my favorite weather phrase from the National Weather Service directly to you, patchy freezing fog, whatever that is. Let us know when you see it, and a low around 28. So it's going to be cold. It will be patchy freezing fog, and a light east wind. That said, if for those of you wondering about the situation vis-a-vis the U.S., that is Donald Trump, and North Korea, we have Christine Hong back. We are so happy to welcome Christine back to the KBOO airwaves. She's going to clarify the situation a little bit. The way that South Korea and North Korea, for that matter, see the situation is vastly different. North Korea, contrary to the statements during Trump's administration, of course, well before it, have time and time again rebuffed North Korea's efforts to negotiate some sort of negotiate its way to a compromise and to lines of communication, and it seems that that message has failed to reach American ears. My guest today, Christine Hong, is an associate professor at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and executive board member of the Korea Policy Institute. She has said in the past that far from being an intractable foe, North Korea has repeatedly asked the United States to sign a peace treaty that would bring the unresolved Korean War to a long overdue end. It is also proposed that the United States cease its annual war games with South Korea, which just in fact concluded, and North Korea has cautioned the United States not to treat war as a game. Not to treat war as a game. And I would imagine that they would include, of course, childish playground name-calling. This is not a playground, something that Donald Trump has apparently failed to understand. I believe that we have Christine on the line right now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Hello, Chris.
Hello. Good morning. Welcome back. We're so happy to have you with us.
Thanks.
Well, despite train derailments and tax overhaul derailments and all the other derailments, what I would hope that was on most people's mind is Donald Trump's threat to actually bring us to war. The very notion of war with North Korea is so preposterously mad. First taking no thought of Japan, no thought of South Korea, no thought of China, no thought of any other nations in the region who would be excellent negotiators. And the fact, too, that nuclear war is not like anything else. People don't seem to get it. How is South Korea and how do other nations, from your perspective, how are they viewing this corner that Trump has boxed us into?
Well, you know, South Korea, under the liberal presidency of Moon Jae-in, has stated a couple of things. It's maintained a pretty equivocal position. It's equivocal because on the one hand, the people who ousted Park Geun-hye, who was a neocon, she was the former president of South Korea, they ousted her. They took to the streets. Millions of South Koreans took to the streets. They ousted her. And one of the reasons they ousted her was her hard line toward North Korea. And that is not a position that the South Korean people support. And so they activated their democracy by actually protesting en masse, and they elected in a snap election Moon Jae-in. So he has been deputized by the South Korean people to push for peace. And he has declared on the one hand to Donald Trump that the United States cannot bypass South Korea in pursuing an aggressive any kind of aggressive action with North Korea. So that is one thing that he has maintained. He has said that his goal is to pursue peace on the Korean Peninsula. So that is what he has rhetorically promised. On the other hand, and this is what makes things equivocal, the United States has a long-standing, what the United States calls a security relationship with South Korea. South Korea is a historic client state of the United States. And in contrast to China, which at the Korean War has never ended. It's an unfinished war. But when the armistice was signed on July 27th of 1953, the armistice stipulated that all occupying powers should remove themselves immediately from the peninsula, and that within 90 days' time, a permanent peace agreement should be settled between the major powers, China, North Korea, and the United States. Whereas the Chinese withdrew all of their forces within half a decade's time, the United States has steadily maintained forces to the tune of about 30,000 troops in South Korea, and it maintains roughly 80 military installations. And so this has been an ongoing, what you could view as an occupation. And in times of war, in times of a heightened war crisis, the United States actually has command control over the South Korean military. And so on the one hand, you have the South Korean president saying, we have to push for peace. On the other hand, you have South Korea's status as a semi-sovereign nation under the United States.
That's not good. Our so-called diplomacy seems not really non-operative at this point, and
exactly.
We don't really have a State Department. We don't have a State Department, period, but we don't have a State Department apparently capable of negotiating with any of the other nations that are, have a very clear relationship with North Korea.
Yes,
China,
yes.
Of course, Japan has to have, the United people are very much involved, whether they like it or not. So how have you seen anything that could be identified as diplomacy on the part of any?
I mean, like Trump basically stated that he has a kind of fear of in any way being likened to his predecessor Obama, and so he has taken a kind of all but Obama approach on the domestic front in terms of foreign policy. You know, it's been one reversal after another. But the fact of the matter is that although Obama made inroads with both Cuba and Iran, and Trump stands to reverse both of those those advances, by contrast, with regard to North Korea, basically, Obama maintained a very hard line. Obama was cozy with neoconservatives within the Asia-Pacific region. His entire Asia-Pacific pivot policy was based upon an American remilitarization of the Asia-Pacific region with an eye towards securing what Hillary Clinton, as his then Secretary of State, declared was America's economic future. And so with regard to Obama's policy toward North Korea, Trump has a really difficult time differentiating his own policy. He has stated that his own policy is maximum pressure and maximum engagement. And, you know, we saw under Obama maximum pressure. Trump has continued that into an era in which North Korea has made serious nuclear advances, but he hasn't done anything to resemble maximum engagement. And, you know, although the sad fact of the matter is that Tillerson's take on North Korea seems to be saner than the man that he serves in the White House. And Trump has taken every opportunity to reverse any kinds of signs of opening, any signs of possibilities of negotiation or engagement that Tillerson has signaled. And so we're in a very, very dire situation right now. If Trump truly wanted to differentiate his policy from Obama, he would actually pursue engagement. That is something that Obama never pursued.
Well, Tillerson, at first came out with a statement of sort of an unconditional platform as a basis of communication at this sort of dire point in time, and then immediately withdrew that. So I wonder what you see. Is there any basis for trust between?
Not at all.
Any of these things? There's not. Well, that's not good, is it?
There's no basis for trust, because if you look at it from the North Korean perspective,
it can't be restored. Yeah.
North Korea in the post-Cold War period has steadily sent the same delegates to the negotiating table with the United States. By contrast, the United States has had what North Korea perceives to be a series of regime changes on the U.S. end. So although a lot of U.S. presidents in the late stages of their second term oftentimes would get vision with regard to North Korea and actually start to reach out, by the time they were replaced by a subsequent president, it was always in the subsequent president's interest to get tough on North Korea. So with regard to Clinton, he made major inroads with North Korea in the late stages of his second term. When George W. Bush came in with the Axis of Evil presidency, he implemented an ABC, an all but Clinton policy. Curiously, in the late stages of his second term, George W. Bush made inroads with North Korea, actually offering humanitarian aid. When Obama came in, he saw fit to get tough on North Korea. Obama maintained a tough line all the way through his two terms in office, Trump still, although he declares that his policy is very different from Obama's policy of strategic patience, which is really a euphemism for non-engagement and intensified militarization.
It seems like that North Korea would have the distinct impression that the U.S. is not taking them seriously. We've only got a minute left. In that time, though, I wanted to ask you, it seems that our so-called State Department and Trump have this notion that if they can pressure China, and then China is going to do the wet work.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely ludicrous. I mean, the entire fiction that we can outsource, U.S. North Korea policy to China makes absolutely no sense. China maintains absolutely different geostrategic interests within the region. You can see that a little bit in Trump's recent national security speech, in which he identified China as a rival. And that is actually the geopolitical truth. That is why Obama's entire policy, his militarized policy for the Asia-Pacific region, was aimed at the containment of China. And that has, there is, despite the shifts in who's in power in the White House, the military-industrial complex in the post-Cold War period, it needs to have permanent conflict. It needs to have permanent war.
Hang on a moment, Christy. We have to go now. But just before we let go, though, finding sources that make any sense at all has become increasingly difficult. Can you refer listeners, where would you suggest people look for somewhat dependable?
Well, thank you for that. I would suggest that they go to the Korea Policy website. It's kpolicy.org, and subscribe to our newsletter.
Thank you so much. My guest has been Christine Hong, Associate Professor at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and Executive Board Member of the Korea Policy Institute. This has been AirCast KDOW.